Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
To Haiti now, where last Friday a new transitional ruling council was finalised to try and bring an end to the gang violence which has plagued the Caribbean island for the past few months. A curfew remains in place 6 weeks on from the violent uprising, where clashes damaged communications and led to a prison escape, prompting the government to declare a state of emergency. A UN report said the country faced a cataclysmic situation with state institutions close to collapse, violence out of control and 1.4 million people a step away from famine. Well, to get the very latest, I'm joined on the line by Katrina Dowd, who's Assistant Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD, and Quanlee Cloudstroup, who's Country Director for Concern Worldwide in Haiti. And thank you both for joining us. Quanlee, can I come to you first? This new transitional council we've heard about today, are you hopeful that's going to bring an end to the ongoing violence that has flared up in locations which were previously considered safe?
Well, I mean, that's what we hope. But I think, you know, we're still living under great instability and uncertainty just because we've been waiting for this for the past close to 2 months now. And, you know, while the situation still remains volatile and unpredictable, as we don't know, you know, when further roadblocks will be set up, it is still very difficult to see where things are going. But I mean, hopefully, you know, we will see some peace and security, which needs to be quickly established to enable humanitarian responses to be scaled up. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a sense of what life is like there? I understand you have a curfew which begins in the early evening and extends to the morning. What is life like?
Sure. I mean, life continues. In some areas, you know, it is more calmer than in other areas, just because there is still, you know, fighting going on. But I mean, like where our office is, it's relatively, I mean, I'm able to go to the office every day and staff are able to come. But, you know, some days because their neighborhoods might be under conflict or there might be violence taking place, they, you know, would be stuck at home. So, you know, they would be working from home. So it's that continued sort of uncertainty that we remain to be living in. In other areas, you know, it is very unstable and people are living, you can see the trauma and, you know, the fear that people are living under because they just don't know if their neighborhood is the next one to be attacked.
Mm-hmm. So, thanks. Katrina, we hear there about trauma, about instability and about fear. Do you think that this news that the transitional council is in place will lead to any sort of change?
I think, as Quanlee has said, it's certainly an indication potentially for hope and for, you know, people are holding out hope that this will be a positive step. But there are still a lot of questions around the council, around the timeline, for example, who exactly will be on the council, how represented and how impactful, I suppose, civil society can be in terms of that work. So ensuring when you have a context of high levels of violence, lots of human rights abuses, you know, where and how well will civil society be engaged in that process? So a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty still, even at that level of the political crisis. It's very far from all set and kind of all confirmed and consolidated at this point.
Can you give us a sense of what has happened in recent times? What situation developed that allowed these criminal gangs and groups to exploit the situation in Haiti and bring us to this point?
Sure. We've seen rapidly escalating violence. February of this year, that was coincided with the acting president being out of the country, and I suppose a seizing that moment and an opportunity of to create, I suppose, a political power vacuum. But more generally, a deterioration in security since the assassination of the acting prime minister was out of the country. It was the late president who was assassinated in July 2021. So there has been this ongoing political crisis, at least from that time, Previous to that, there had been quite a lot of unrest around things like cost of living crises, fuel price crisis and so forth, that were creating conditions in which armed groups were able to exploit crumbling state infrastructure and services. They were able to take control of large parts of the city, and now reports have it that they're extending that control elsewhere. By some accounts, armed groups now control an estimated 80% of the city. So it's a really, really sizable piece of territory that they're controlling, and a really significant collapse in terms of the state's ability to meet people's needs and providing for basic services.
And Quanli, one of the very sad aspects of this is that schools have been affected, hospitals too, but in particular schools, and Haitians really value the education system. What's been happening?
I mean, people, we've just seen since 2020, since June 2021, we've just seen, you know, mass displacement and this continued cycle of displacement. And while, you know, people were initially being accommodated, you know, with friends and relatives, itinerary displaced sites have, you know, popped up, and, you know, from community centers to schools, churches, and, you know, covered spaces, which, you know, has impacted on the overall sort of social aspect of life, because children aren't able to go to school anymore. Because of insecurity, and, you know, because, you know, we've also lost a lot of qualified teachers over the past year who have, you know, migrated to the U.S. or Canada. But because, you know, the schools are now hosting internally displaced people, children are no longer, you know, are missing out on an education. Mm-hmm. So we've, you know, lost at least one generation, if not two, you know, of educated people. And it's saddening and heartbreaking that, because, you know, education is very important to families, and because they aren't able to send their children to school, you know, they're very frustrated, and they're hoping, you know, that at least some stability will come back, so that, you know, at least schools will be able to function as they should be.
Mm-hmm. Those who are trying to leave, Katrina, to leave Haiti, where are they going? Can they leave?
In any crisis, people with, you know, sufficient resources often can find some way out. So there are some paths of migration where people are emigrating, of course, and that will mean, as Quanli had said, sort of a loss of particularly high-skilled people from the economy and from Haitian society. Sadly, in terms of asylum, so in terms of refugee processes, in terms of safe passage, there are very few options. So we've seen countries around the region closing or tightening their borders, denying, saying, you know, there is no place for Haitian refugees here. That creates a huge issue in terms of people's right to protection, their right to international protection, and how people can be accommodated in this context. So putting enormous strain and stress on resources within Haiti itself. At the same time, we've still seen civil society and rights groups are still calling for many states to stop forcibly returning Haitian migrants and refugees from other places. So some states are continuing to forcibly return Haitians to Haiti in the midst of this crisis. So as recently as March, rights groups came together to call for an end to that, and it's something the UN has highlighted as well. So unfortunately, there aren't very many passages, particularly safe ones, and that is certainly contributing to additional strain and stress in terms of the crisis internally.
And Katrina, I mentioned at the beginning that this UN report said that there are 1.4 million people who are a step away from famine. And I know that you've carried out research when you were in Haiti into conflict and food insecurity. What is the situation now around hunger there?
Thank you. And that work, I should say, was done in conjunction with Concern and supported by Irish Aid. So that work highlighted just at that stage, some years ago now, just how precarious the food system was. It found that conflict was really affecting every stage of the food system, from production, particularly to transport. We might think Haiti, it's a small island, Port-au-Prince, it's a small space physically, but the challenge of getting food from a port in a country that's highly dependent on food imports, the challenge even of getting food goods from one part of the city to another is absolutely enormous in the context of this kind of level of armed violence. So things like checkpoints, groups taxing or extracting taxes, informal taxes from people trying to get their food to market, that is both limiting the number of people and the amount of goods that can actually move between these areas. It also means the price of food is absolutely, you know, out of reach of many people who are now going into several months of a kind of an ongoing crisis where their income has also been affected. So we're looking at 5 million people experiencing high levels of food insecurity somewhere on that food crisis scale. And that is really, really enormous in terms of an island that, you know, has the capacity to produce and to sort of serve and meet food needs. It's not that it has been in a protracted and, you know, recurring cycles of food crisis, you know, as a sort of a feature of its own food system and economy. This is very much linked to conflict and the fact that it is paralysing the food system.
And Quanli, can you give us a sense of what you're seeing in that regard on a day-to-day basis?
It is a challenge for Haitians. I mean, before, you know, they used to eat 2-3 meals a day, but now just because of the increase in prices, availability of food, because, you know, that nothing is coming in through the port because the port hasn't been functioning for a good couple of weeks now. The airport, likewise for the airport. So, you know, we're not seeing the food stocks as we were before. And I think, you know, in some areas, you know, small vendors are really struggling because it's their livelihood and because they aren't able to, you know, sell their produce. They are really struggling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for families as well, because, you know, they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And, you know, they're already living under a lot of uncertainty. So this is just an added stress for them. And, you know, while Haitians are resilient, you know, I think they're also tired because they've been living through this for the past, you know, few years. And it's just been one sort of crisis after another. And they're at a loss. They're not sure, you know, what next. So I think, you know, it is really the time to be scaling up humanitarian assistance to, and hopefully, you know, bring back some stability so that people can, you know, sort of feel secure and comfortable to at least, you know, move on. But it is a challenge
for many. Well, let's hope the news that transitional council is in place leads to some change in the near term. Quanli Cloudstroup, Country Director for Concern Worldwide in Haiti, thank you for joining us. And Katrina Dowd from UCD, thank you both for being with us on the programme this morning. Now, coming up next, if you have a child going to college next autumn, you won't want to miss Owen McGee, because Owen will be giving financial advice after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.